Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. My guest today is Scott Ritter, and Scott is going to talk about what the rest of the world thinks about America today. So, Scott, you have a good handle on what's going on. What does the world think of us?
Well, to understand that, we have to understand how we as a nation interface with the world. You know, since the end of the Second World War, the United States has been promoting what we call the rules-based liberal order. That is, we have a United Nations, and people should never forget that, you know, we were the heart and soul behind the United Nations, formed in San Francisco with a lot of push by the United States as the victor of the Second World War, supported by the Soviet Union, Great Britain, France, and other nations who had said, we never again want to go through this experience. But it's one thing to say, this is what we want to do. It's another thing to move down that path. And as the so-called free world's leader, the United States was the one that led nations that were similarly inclined toward democratic rule, representation by, you know, electoral processes and by rules, trade rules, commerce, things of that nature. We'd have agreements, treaties about peace, treaties about commerce, treaties about virtually everything. This is the rules-based liberal world order. And many people bought into this. Europe bought into it. Many nations, Japan, South Korea, Australia, bought into it. Many nations didn't. The Soviet Union didn't. China didn't. Many places in Africa and in Asia were ambivalent about this. But the United States felt that it was the defender of this rules-based world order. And, you know, almost everything we did was defined by, you know, how we retain the dominant position we enjoyed as the leader of the rules-based liberal world order. And that's pretty much what drives our foreign policy today, how we interface with the world today. We continue to say we must defend the rules-based liberal world order. If you listen to Joe Biden, his primary attack on Donald Trump in terms of how we interface with the world is that Trump has walked away from the rules-based liberal world order. But one of the reasons why Trump is walking away from the rules-based liberal world order is what may have worked 75 years ago doesn't work today. The world is a different world. There's been a massive geopolitical shift, new realities. It's not a bipolar world divided between the forces of good led by the United States and the forces of evil led by the Soviet Union. It's now a very much a multipolar world where nations such as India, South Africa, Brazil, Mexico, Iran, anywhere you go, are saying we have a voice too. We're not going to allow our voice to be muted by the Americans imposing a rules-based world order that we didn't buy into, that we don't agree to, and we, frankly speaking, don't benefit from. And even when you have nations such as our NATO allies in Europe, they're starting to feel their own oats. They're starting to say, hey, Europe needs to have a voice of its own. And we don't want to be, you know, simply the poor European cousins who, you know, have to listen and obey the United States. So the United States, even if we were getting along with the world famously, if people liked us and loved us and said, hey, Americans, you're good people, there would be friction nonetheless because we're trying to maintain a 75-year-old system that's out of touch with the modern world. But now we have to understand that we're not trying to benevolently impose this. We impose this through force. We impose this by threatening violence, by threatening economic ruin in the form of sanctions. Basically, it's our way or the highway. And so the world right now views us as a force that's out of touch with the reality of the modern world. They don't trust us. They don't believe that we are capable of providing the leadership that we once did. They would like to be our friends, but they certainly don't want to be subservient to an American overlord.
What I'm thinking, though, Scott, is, you know, if you put the TV on a lot of stations, criticize Trump, they call him not unpresidential. They say, you know, he's more or less a joke. How does the rest of the world view our government?
Well, it's not just our government. How do they view, you know, remember, governments are produced by an electoral process in which the people participate. The world isn't just calling Donald Trump a joke. They're calling us a joke. They're calling the people of the United States, you know, a joke. They look at more than just a president and what the president says. We're a nation that says that, you know, we hold other nations account for what we claim to be fraudulent elections. And yet our election right now would not survive any scrutiny by any international organization about, you know, being, you know, fair and free and void of problems. We have an extremely problematic, you know, electoral process. We have a nation that, you know, belittles China and the World Health Organization about the corona, you know, virus pandemic, and that our own methodologies used to respond to it are incompetence, not just from the president, but from 50 governors. We don't have a healthcare system worthy of the name. We don't have a social safety net capable of sustaining businesses and citizens, you know, sufficiently if we shut down the country, as people are saying we need to do to bring this pandemic under control. We have a failing infrastructure. We pour, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars into a military that doesn't work, doesn't achieve victory, demands more money, is not seen as a force of good. So they can call Donald Trump a joke, but the things they're criticizing, you know, it's superficial. If you want to criticize Donald Trump for being crude in his statements, so be it. Barack Obama is one of the smoothest talkers you'll ever have as a president. But when push comes to shove, how the United States interfaced with the rest of the world under Barack Obama is exactly the same how we interface under Donald Trump. Just Barack Obama sold it better, made people feel good while America was crushing them, as opposed to Donald Trump, who, frankly speaking, is in your face about it. He's a much more honest politician than Barack Obama or any other president before him because he says what he thinks. There's no – when you think about Donald Trump, there's no questioning where he stands on an issue. He'll let you know. There's no diplomatic finesse, no, you know, political massaging. He'll tell you right to his face, right to your face, what he thinks. And most of the time we can disagree with what he says. We can say that's not sound, that's not wise, but we can never say we don't know where Donald Trump stands on an issue.
So do you think that if Biden wins the election, he's going to be a continuation of Barack Obama?
Well, here's the big problem for you know, Joe Biden. Foreign policy always plays second fiddle to domestic policy. So, you know, we can have aggressive foreign policy when we have a sound domestic political base, when things are okay. Joe Biden's going to inherit a country that no matter what happens on November 3rd, November 4th, is going to be divided 50-50. 50% of the country will hate his guts, despise him as a human being, and will never support him. Not only that, he's inheriting a country that is fundamentally broken. No healthcare system, just degrading infrastructure, no safety net. An economy that is dysfunctional, not just in recession, but in depression. Maybe a depression greater than that which existed in the 1930s. His singular focus is going to be on how to repair this domestic damage. There's not going to be any grand foreign policy initiatives under Joe Biden because he can't afford it. I mean, even under the best circumstances, you know, a new administration requires, you know, about 10 months to get their act together before they can have anything resembling a foreign policy. They have to refocus their effort, reorganize, get everybody on board, get the rest of the world comfortable with them, and then they move forward. And if you examine presidencies, very few major foreign policy victories take place in the first term. Most of your big things, Nixon going to China, Reagan ending the Cold War, they occur in the second term of a two-term president. So Joe Biden is not going to be a great foreign policy president. One, the domestic realities at home will not allow it. And two, even if things are going great, it would be a first-term president. Things just don't happen. Plus, he has to now reverse course from 4 years of Donald Trump. And Donald Trump's foreign policy, we can be as critical of as we want to, is more reflective of the true reality of the geopolitical situation in the world today. Joe Biden is simply going to seek to try and reinvigorate this rules-based liberal world order that the American establishment has always been defending. So he'll be fighting an uphill battle no matter what. It's a losing battle. He's not going to win. There's just not going to be good foreign policy under Joe Biden. And this is a dangerous thing because in America, when we run out of diplomatic options, we don't simply just step back and do nothing. We tend to go forward and bomb. And Joe Biden is a bomber. He's a warmonger. He's a man who chooses the military option every time. He will lie about, you know, things in order to go to war. So his default option is not diplomacy, talk, talk, talk. His default option is war, bomb, bomb, bomb. And that's what we're going to get from a Biden administration, almost absolutely guaranteed. We're going to be further embroiled in international conflicts, which we can't win, which we won't win, which will further bankrupt us fiscally and morally, and further alienate us from the rest of the world. You know, the rest of the world calls us a joke, but we're a dangerous joke. Punchlines don't just make you laugh. Our punchlines kill you. And you know, we're as bad as you think America is, we're still the most powerful nation on the face of the earth. We can do more in more places with more military power than any other nation. And unfortunately, we have a tendency to do just that, flex our muscle, reach out and punch different places in the world when we're not happy. And trust me, under Joe Biden, America is not going to be happy about how the world looks at it.
So in the first couple of primaries, Joe Biden was getting his butt whipped. Then came South Carolina, and everybody seemed to fall in line. Do you think the establishment wanted Biden for just the reasons you outlined, that he will be a bomber and a warmonger?
Well, they want the establishment wants Joe Biden because he is the establishment. I mean, you 47 years in the Senate. I mean, you can't become more establishment than that. And yes, that's exactly what they wanted. They wanted somebody who was going to, you know, toe the party line, not just the Democratic Party line, but the American Party line. You know, understand that the traditional Republican establishment has fallen behind Joe Biden. You know, all of the old time Republicans that served, right, you know, George W. Bush and et cetera, they're all supporting Joe Biden. So, you know, we traditionally think of this, you know, of elections as Democrats versus Republicans. But the truth of the coming election is it's old school Democrats and old school Republicans versus Donald Trump. You know, Trump has taken over the Republican Party. It is the party of Trump right now. And he still may win. I mean, even though he has the establishment against him, he may win because America is tiring of the establishment. The world is tiring of the establishment. The establishment doesn't work. It's a 75-year experiment whose time has come. It's passed. And, you know, Biden is desperately clawing and trying to, you know, retain, you know, the hold on this experiment. And the establishment is propping him up because the establishment can't exist unless you continue this rules-based liberal world order. The two are inextricably linked. So Donald Trump is a threat to all of this. So, of course, the establishment stepped in South Carolina because they saw that the Democratic Party was heading in a direction that may very well put, you know, Bernie Sanders at the top of the ticket. They can't have that.
Mm-hmm.
Bernie Sanders is not the establishment. So they stepped in. Once again, they sabotaged the Sanders bid for, you know, to be elected or to be nominated. And they put forward a male version of Hillary Clinton, you know, somebody who is of the establishment, for the establishment, by the establishment.
How many people really realize this?
Well, I would say that the defenders of the establishment realize this. They know exactly what they did and why they did it. I would say that there's a large number of people who believe this but are unwilling to do anything about it, because one of the key things about the establishment is that it plays and preys upon a citizenry that has wrapped itself in a cocoon of comfort and just wants to waddle along fat and happy, and as long as they get fed, can buy their car, buy their house, watch their TV, whatever, they don't want to rock the boat. If they think too much about what's going on, they realize that, oh, no, maybe this all isn't good, but they dumb themselves down. Look at the news. The news is particularly, you know, formulated to be the dumbest, lowest common denominator of garbage, entertainment, you know, bias-filled nonsense. It's not news. It's not education. You're not learning about what's going on in America or the world. You're either being, you know, lulled into complacency by through fear. You know, you must fear the pandemic. You must fear the rioters. You must fear this. Therefore, go in, you know, go into your little crutch, do nothing while we save you. That's not how America's supposed to work, by the way. It's not that, you know, some higher power is supposed to save the people. We, the people, save ourselves by voting, you know, good people into office that represent our desires. But we've lost that. We don't have a choice in who we – you think the American people picked Joe Biden and Donald Trump? No.
I
processes that are outside of the control of the American people picked them. On election day, we don't have any say who's on that ballot. None whatsoever. And yet we pretend to be a democracy.
Wow. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the news and TV. I remember seeing you on Phil Donahue on MSNBC. How many times were you on?
With Donahue, I was on either two or three times. I'm thinking maybe two. There might have been a third appearance. I can't remember.
Okay.
That was a long time ago.
So I'm sure that what you're telling me, you mentioned this on national TV, right?
Back then, I was a variation of what I'm talking about. I was more focused on the Iraq War and being critical of the anti-war movement, but the theme's the same. I mean, the bottom line is Americans are dumbed down. We're dumbed down by a system that's designed to, you know, wrap us in a cocoon of comfort and keep us, you know, mollified so that we turn a blind eye to abuses of power by the establishment. It's the same thing that happened in 2002, 2003. It's happening today.
And I'm sure the corporate people at MSNBC, they were not happy with what you're saying, correct?
Oh, not just them. I mean, you need to understand that after 9/11, I was hired by Fox News to be an on-air analyst to talk about these things. And I think after three or four appearances, they realized they made a mistake. And Fox News, you know, I had a 6-month contract. They basically paid out the contract, but they wouldn't allow me on the air. And they prevented me from going on other outlets too. So for a 6-month period there, I was kept off the airways because my views were so controversial. They paid me to stay off the air. That was a fascinating period of time. But so it's not just MSNBC, it's CNN. I've had my run-ins with CNN. I went down to their corporate headquarters, had a meeting with their leadership where they, you know, pretended to vet me to see if I could come on air. But my views turned out to be, you know, too uncomfortable for them because I confronted them with the hypocrisy of their own situation. there's not a media outlet that I haven't confronted about their hypocrisy, and which is one of the reasons why I'm not on too many media outlets today, because it's just too inconvenient. I'm not going to pull any punches.
Okay, so when you were on Fox, what did you say that got them all riled up?
Well, they thought I was going to come on air and say Saddam Hussein's the worst person in the world and we need to go to war. And instead I came on and said, no, the weapons of mass destruction is a fabricated case for war. The last thing we need is a war, and we need to get weapons inspectors back in there to finish the job. Everything I said was fact-based and truth. That's not the message they were trying to sell. They were trying to sell Saddam is bad, war is good. And my message was not the one they thought I was going to say.
So what was gospel on Fox was also gospel on MSNBC. Would you agree?
At that time, everybody. Look, not just MSNBC. Again, I go to CNN. I went down to CNN in October of 2002. And I had this big meeting with 60 of the top CNN talking heads and their leadership. And when it was done, they brought me into the back room. In October 2002, they were already preparing for war. They had a war room. They were already in contact with the Pentagon. They were building the slides they were going to use for the war. They were preparing their reporters to be embedded. CNN was 100% behind the war at the very time the American public needed to be educated about the reality of the war, about war really, what it stands for. Was there a weapons of mass destruction threat, et cetera? CNN was hopeful that I would promote the Saddam is bad, war is good thing. When they realized I wouldn't, I became inconvenient. But I saw what CNN was up to. I saw what CBS was up to. I saw what NBC was up to. They were all up to the same thing. Remember, we don't have news organizations anymore. We have entertainment bureaus that are part of larger business conglomerates. What they call a news organization is an entertainment organization. And war is one of the greatest entertainers there is out there. War is good for business. War brings advertisers. War brings viewership. War brings in money. And so, you know, they're all sitting there banking on a war where they're going to make a lot of money. And I'm coming in saying, no war. So I'm bad for business, even though what I'm saying might be factually correct, might be accurate. They don't want factually correct. They don't want accurate. They want a message that conforms to a business plan that preys upon the fears and ignorance of an audience they want to continue to scare and keep ignorant. I mean, corporate news organizations are a disgrace to journalism. And it's not just the TV. We see that with the New York Times, the Washington Post, and other major print outlets. They don't print facts. They print bias that's designed to increase their business viability. They're in it for the dollar. They're not in it to tell the truth.
So we have 2 weeks left until the election. What do you envision for the next 2 weeks?
Well, I see Donald Trump going for broke. He's going to go out there and play the anti-establishment card. I see Joe Biden countering by further wrapping himself in the cloak of the establishment. I see the media rallying behind Biden, but I also see a sense that a good part of the American population is just fed up. It's not that they love Donald Trump. They're fed up with the establishment, and Donald Trump is the quintessential anti-establishment man. So, I see us going into this election of the deeply divided country, closely divided. I don't think we're looking at a runaway on either side, but, I think it's leaning Trump. I if someone were to ask me today who I think is going to win the election, I think Donald Trump's going to win the election along the same lines that he won in 2016, a close election. But with the Electoral College, he's going to have an overwhelming number of electoral votes. And there will be no question who was selected out of the constitutional process. I think more Americans are going to vote for Joe Biden, just like more Americans voted for Hillary Clinton. But those Americans are, concentrated heavily in New York and California. When you factor in the rest of the country, I don't think Biden's resonating as much as the media likes you to believe. I don't think the polls are accurate. I think they're heavily biased against Donald Trump. You know, that's that. I could be wrong. I don't make a living off doing polling. I will say this. In 2016, I made the same prediction for the same reasons. And I just see much of the same phenomena that I sensed back in 2016 in play today. But we'll see. It's going to be a very close election, which makes it a very dangerous election because fully 50% of the country is not going to endorse whoever wins. I mean, if Biden wins, all the pro-Trump people are going to say this was a stolen election, et cetera. If Trump wins, all the pro-Biden people are going to say the same thing. You know, this is going to be a very nasty election and probably be some nasty results coming from it. I wish it wasn't the case, but, you know, we're a nation that's fundamentally divided and we're and basically, you know, we're suffering as you know, collectively suffering because of the pandemic, because of healthcare, because of, you know, no jobs. And so our frustration level is through the roof. And, you know, all it takes is, you know, something that shakes us up and brings that anger out. And a contentious election could very well be that thing.
So the election was decided the next day, like early in the morning the next day. Do you anticipate the election not being decided immediately, but it'll be drawn out because of the pandemic?
I anticipate that Donald Trump is going to seek to call this election as soon as possible. If not the first night, the second night. The second Donald Trump sees a set of numbers that that shows he, you know, is in the lead or the winner, he's going to seek to stop the process right there and say, I am the winner. Joe Biden's going to say we have to let every vote be counted, and because of the mail-in ballot, things of this nature, this could drag out for weeks or months. And Joe Biden will not concede. And so we're going to have a very interesting period of time where Donald Trump is going to say, I am the president, I'm preparing for a second term. And Joe Biden's going to be saying, I am the president, I'm preparing for a first term. And this will go to the courts. It may very well end up going to Congress. But the bottom line is, no matter who emerges as, you know, the official victor, the other one will always say that they're the aggrieved party, and this is going to lead to a fundamentally divided country. That even if there's a peaceful transition of power, and I pray there is, there's still going to be a restless opposition that will never view whoever sits in the White House as a legitimate president. And, you know, and so, again, whether it's Biden or Trump, they're going to be carrying this anchor around their neck for the next 4 years.
Wow. So, Scott, our time is up. We have 2 weeks to go. And as this evolves, and even after the election, I think your thoughts and what you say is very valuable. So I hope to, you know, speak with you again soon. So you've been listening to Scott Ritter, and this is All Exits Closed. I'm Cynthia Pooler. So if you like this show, follow us on Twitter. Thank you. Have a great day. Thanks, Scott. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Bye.
Thanks, Cynthia. Bye.